Welcome to the Big Three podcast. This podcast answers three big questions raised from Sunday's sermon by the congregation of Guymere Baptist. The Big Three pod seeks to discuss these questions, explore issues, unpack theology, provide further information and explanation to help your faith grow. You can listen to the original sermon on your favourite podcast platform or at guymerebaptist.org.au. Our prayer is that this pod helps you as you follow Jesus.
Well, welcome to the Big Three. My name is Mark. I'm the senior pastor here at Guymere Baptist Church and your host for the next half hour or so as we do unpack three big questions that came out of Sunday's message. Last Sunday was a bit of a one-off, a standalone. We had Melissa Lipsett with us. She's the CEO of Baptist World Aid Australia. She has become a bit of a regular guest for us. I quipped on Sunday morning that, you know, after this visit, she was probably going to have to be a regular because we'd be a little bit too familiar with her to talk about her as a guest, but it was really wonderful to have her with us. She preached in the morning. And then in the evening, we had the opportunity to interview her, actually, and talk a little bit about the way in which God had led her with some reflections on what it means for us to step into what God has in front of us. How do we do that with courage? And it was a really wonderful opportunity to hear some more of her story, but also to reflect on what that looks like for each of us. However, we don't record the evening at the moment, and so unless you were there, you didn't get to hear that interview. But in the morning, she spoke from Matthew chapter 14 and the feeding of the 5,000 and pulled out four kind of key ideas that relate then to how we respond to the need for justice. Speaking about, you know, seeing people, bringing what we have, relying on what Jesus has to offer, all of those sorts of things. And the questions really relate to the miracle, the event in Matthew chapter 14, and I guess the ongoing implications for us. So the questions this week are, first of all, can you comment on the provision coming as the distribution is taking place? That was a new thought for me. And I would say that it was a new thought for me as well. In the opportunity that I had to chat with Melissa, both after the morning service and then a little bit before the evening service, she reflected that that was a relatively new thought for her when she came to write that message. That idea that Jesus didn't create a big pile of food for 5,000 and then distribute it, but he began to distribute it kind of as it was taking place. So that's a great question. Secondly, how does generosity relate to only having a couple of loaves and fishes? What if we have more loaves and fishes? So the question relates to, I guess, you know, there's the almost the contrast between having a significant amount of resource and how do we utilize that for the kingdom and that sense of not having much. You know, as I said, we chatted to Melissa in the evening a little bit about, you know, stepping into new opportunities when we often feel like we've only got a couple loaves and a couple fishes. And if anything's going to happen, Jesus is going to have to do a miracle. But there are other times, you know, when we face injustice in the world or need around us where we do struggle, I think, to know how far to go, right? And so, yeah, we'll unpack that a bit. And the third question is, what is the significance of 12 baskets of leftovers, which is detail within the story that's certainly worth digging into. So let's get stuck in. So can you comment on the provision coming as the distribution is taking place? That was a new thought for me. And as I mentioned, it was a new thought for me as well. And for Melissa, apparently, or more recent new thought for her. And I think it's a really significant one. It's a really significant one. And actually, the principle, shall we say, of provision coming, I won't say in dribs and drabs, but the provision only coming as it's being distributed, I think speaks about the faith that's required. I think it speaks into and reflects a number of other passages in Scripture. So, you know, in the story, of course, as I hinted at the outset, Jesus doesn't take the loaves and fishes and kind of break them up and, you know, get them into baskets until there's enough for 5,000 people. The impression that we get as the story is told is that Jesus, you know, took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and gave it to his disciples, just like he does at the Last Supper, incidentally, and they began to distribute it to the crowds. You can imagine them having, you know, those shallow baskets and Jesus just breaking the bread until the basket was full. And then, you know, Andrew would trot out and serve people the bread, and then Jesus would break up the fish and whatnot. And so there's this sense that it's happening as it's being distributed. And that doesn't mean that they had to happen together. I suppose Jesus could have broken up 5,000 people worth, right, plus women and children. So I don't know, 10,000, you know, enough food for 10,000 people and then distributed it. But the way the story is told, it's not, it just doesn't seem to go that way. And I think that's, as I said, it's in line, first of all, with certain stories that we have, particularly in the Old Testament, of a similar kind of nature. So you go back to the provision of manna in the wilderness, which in some regards, of course, is the story that sits behind the feeding of the 5,000. In John's gospel, that becomes quite explicit because, you know, the next day, the Pharisees basically come up and they connect what Jesus did with Moses providing for the people in the wilderness. And Jesus kind of unpacks that, does the whole "I'm the bread of life" piece and whatnot. So the provision of manna in the wilderness was enough for a day. If the Israelites collected more than a day's worth, it filled with maggots and was inedible the next day, except, of course, on the Sabbath. So the day before the Sabbath, they could collect 2 days' worth, and it would remain fresh over those 2 days as part of God's provision. But there's something about, you know, again, right in that story, that God provides their daily bread for them, right? The same is true in a couple of the miracles of Elijah and Elisha. You think about Elijah and the widow at Zarephath. He meets her after having fled from Israel because of the drought, and asks her to make him a loaf of bread, and she basically says, "Listen, I've got enough flour and enough oil for my son and I to have kind of one last meal, and then we're basically going to die." And Elijah says that it won't run out. And so it doesn't run out. Every day there's just enough flour and just enough oil, but there's never a shipment of, you know, a carton of flour. There's never a, you know, a 20-liter tub of oil. Like, it's just enough. It just doesn't run out, but there's never an enormous surplus. Elisha helps a widow where there is a lot of oil, to tell you the truth, but she is about to lose her sons to debtors, having to sell them into slavery, basically, to manage her debt. And Elisha just says, "Go get every container you can and pour the oil that you have, and it will fill all of them. You can sell it and pay off your debt." But there's this sense, again, that it's just kind of, it's as it's happening, right? So I think that background provides us with, I think, a bit of a frame then to think about what Jesus is doing. And it also provides us with a frame for how we ought to expect God's provision in our lives. We very rarely have everything that we need at the start. We are forced, I suppose that's the right term. We are forced to have faith that the next step is the right next step, right? You may have heard that that metaphor that God kind of shows you the next section, right? There's a light for my, thy word is a lamp to my feet. The sense that, you know, I can see where my next step is, but I can't necessarily see the end goal. And you know, that's true in all aspects of life, right? We very rarely know the end from the beginning. We very rarely know how everything's going to turn out. We very rarely have everything that we need or feel utterly prepared for what we're going to face. It is, you know, if I can go back to my only and favorite Latin phrase, salvador ambulando, it is solved by walking, right? You kind of start. So I think that those are the things that I think are kind of at play in what Melissa was encouraging us to think about. You know, we can sometimes want to get all of our ducks in a line before we step out in faith. And I mean, to some degree, that's not faith anymore. If we know how it's going to happen, if we have everything lined up, then that's not quite faith, right? We are forced, I think, to step out in faith. And so I think that's a valuable piece of part of the subtext of the story, shall I say, the way it reflects other examples of God's provision for his people in this kind of daily sense, where there's never the provision up front of everything. We have to wait for the ongoing payments, shall we say, right? The installments to come in week after week and day after day and month after month and year after year as we follow after Jesus. It was a really helpful reflection of God's provision and what we should expect, I think, when we're seeking to follow Jesus into something that we're a little bit uncertain about as well. So how does generosity relate to only having a couple of loaves and fish? What if we have more loaves and fishes? So I think what this is getting at is I'm not sure it's two sides of one coin, but there's two places that we come at certain opportunities. Some we come at where we look at the need. You know, you think about the parable, the miracle. You know, there's 5,000 men plus women plus children. Jesus says, you give them something to eat. And the disciples are like, that's a huge task, and we have very limited resources. And we often feel that way, I think, when we're called to step into something new in particular. You know, God's called us into something, and we don't feel that we're necessarily ready or prepared or adequately equipped or whatever the case might be. And then there's the other side where the need may still be great, but we realize that we actually have more significant resources. I mean, we rarely have the adequate resources to completely manage something, right? You know, I think one of the valuable aspects of Melissa's stories about our partner in Lebanon, Marath, the Baptist World Aid Lebanon, so to speak, and their work with Syrian refugees. So part of the value of that is just to kind of remind us that, you know, man, to some degree, it doesn't matter how many loaves and how many fishes we have. That's just such an enormous, complicated, complex, difficult situation that the only thing that's going to bring resolution and transformation is Jesus, right? But there are times when we realize that, yeah, there's a great need, but we actually have more than two loaves and some fish. We've actually got a small truckload of resources, and while that's still inadequate to solve the crisis, what do we bring to Jesus? You know, apparently he doesn't need much to work with. You know, when Jesus is tempted in the wilderness, you know, Satan says you could turn these stones into bread. So Jesus probably could have solved the food problem even if there were no loaves and no fishes. He probably could have worked it all out, but and could have worked with less, right? There's no magical number of loaves and fish that Jesus has as a bare minimum, right? But there is, I think, an important question, you know, which is being asked here, about generosity in that space. Because I wouldn't say that generosity is part of the disciples coming to Jesus saying, we've only got a few things. I think that's their reaction to the overwhelming need. I don't think that they're being generous, giving all that they have to Jesus. It's just that it's kind of an expression of there's all these people and we have very, very, very limited resources. And Jesus says, you could bring that to me. Generosity, I think, falls into a slightly different category for us, right? Which is recognizing that, okay, we are invited to participate in what God's doing. And there are opportunities for us. And we are encouraged to be faithful and to be part of what God is doing. And so generosity does involve, you know, bringing what we can to Jesus and asking him to bless it and asking him to do more with it and asking him to multiply it so that its impact is extraordinary when what we're bringing is not particularly. And I think when we talk generosity, that we're then talking about, you know, wisdom, about how much to give, how much time to spend, what kind of resources we have available. And there are other answers to that question then, right? About the passions, the things that stir our hearts. I think that's a really important place for us to be generous. I think, you know, instances of great need are opportunities for us to be generous. I think there's an invitation for us to try to be generous like God is generous to us, right? And kind of try to go above and beyond in some of those instances. But those feel a little bit separate to me from the miracle in Mark chapter 14, where generosity is not really the issue. And I realize that's not what the question is asking. But so I think that feels to me where the distinction is between those things. That, you know, when there's a need that we face, we ought to try to be as generous as we can be, even if that's not very much. That's probably the key principle. I do think there are a couple of places in Scripture, of course, where the generosity of little is celebrated. So that, you know, the widow and the widow's mite, as I remember it, you know, just bringing a couple of pennies, and Jesus basically saying that's a more generous gift than all these other big gifts that have been given, because she's given out of her need, not out of her excess. We find the same thing reflected in 1 Corinthians when Paul encourages and kind of subtly seeks to shame the Corinthians into being generous by pointing out that the Macedonian believers, in the midst of enormous poverty and affliction, had given more than they were able. Basically says, if they could do that, then you can do so much more. So I think that, you know, here in this, in the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000, I think there is an invitation to say, you know, if you've got, two loaves and five fish or whatever it was, bring that to Jesus. If you've got 20 loaves and 15 fish, bring that to Jesus. If you've got 60 loaves of bread and 25 fish, bring that to Jesus. We are called to bring what we have, whether those resources are meager or substantial, and allow Jesus to utilize them. So I think there is space, obviously, for us to think about generosity, even though it's a bit of a subtext here for us. So I hope that's helpful. That's a good question to think about, how we respond to the circumstances and situations around us, and even the invitations of God. How do we really step into those spaces generously, even if the cost is kind of borne by us, in the sense of, you know, it's you know, I'm stepping into something I don't feel necessarily prepared, but I bring my gifts and abilities and my experiences and ask God to multiply them. So I think that there's opportunities for generosity in all of those spaces. So the final question today is, what is the significance of 12 baskets of leftovers? It is a curious part of the story, I think. I'm more familiar with Mark's account of the feeding of the 5,000, which is quite likely the basis for Matthew's account in terms of some of the details within it. But I think there's a couple of, shall we say, obvious components. I mean, numbers are often used symbolically. And so the fact that there are 12 basketfuls, you know, there were 12 apostles and there were the 12 tribes of Israel, does seem to be more than coincidence. So I think that there's something in that. I don't know exactly what, right? Because it's talking about the baskets of leftovers and connecting the leftovers to the tribes or to the apostles. I'm not sure what we do with that, but I do think there's something going on there just because of the quote unquote coincidental nature of the number 12. I think more significantly, if you think about the Old Testament precedent, right? The manna from heaven. The people of Israel were not, apart from the Sabbath, as I mentioned earlier, they were not to collect more than enough for a day's food, a day's provision, right? There were to be no leftovers because if there were leftovers, they would spoil. And it's not just that, yeah, I mean, leftovers always spoil, of course, right? But it wasn't just about the leftovers spoiling. It was really about trusting for tomorrow, right? So the collection of manna for just enough for a day was really an act of trust that God would provide for tomorrow. The fact that there are 12 baskets of leftovers, shall we say, reinforces the fact that Jesus was and is able to provide more than enough. Like, I think that's substantial, right? There's a couple of the details in the story that I think are quite helpful to keep in mind. The one is that they all ate and were satisfied. I just think about that. There are 5,000 men plus women plus children, and they have all eaten enough. Like, they are all, they were all full. When Andrew and Simon and Peter, and John went around with the baskets and said, "Do you want any more?" They're like, "No, I really couldn't. Like, I'm full. I couldn't fit another thing in." So there's just this overwhelming kind of provision. It wasn't as if Jesus provided just enough for the people to have enough energy to get home. It wasn't like a Jetstar snack, right? You know, a little bag of peanuts and a glass of, you know, of Coke. There was something over the top in terms of his provision. And alongside the fact that the crowd was satisfied, there were leftovers. I sometimes think about the fact that Jesus over-catered. Now, I'm not a caterer, and I would imagine that 12 baskets of leftovers after having fed a crowd of 8,000 or 9,000 people, 10,000 people, I think that would be within the realm of reasonable plus and minus, right? You know, you'd kind of say, we were pretty close there, you know, only 12 basketfuls, that's all right. But the fact that Jesus over caters, that he provides and there's leftovers, I think is a striking image of the kingdom that he proclaims. In the midst of his provision, he's basically saying there's more than enough for you. There's more than enough here to provide for you and for those around you. And so you don't need to be fearful and you don't need to hoard. You can actually just eat and be satisfied and, right, we can move on. In Mark's account, shortly after the feeding of the 5,000, Jesus interacts with the Syrophoenician woman. It's that curious story where she comes and asks Jesus to heal her daughter who is possessed by an evil spirit. And Jesus responds with a curious statement. He says, you know, it's not right to give the children's bread to the dogs. And she responds by saying, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." And the occurrence of crumbs is kind of basically the same idea that we find in the feeding of the 5,000. They gathered all these crumbs, these leftovers, these chunks that were left over. And it's almost as if the woman is basically saying to Jesus, I don't actually need the full banquet from you. I don't need the children's food. I don't need the meat and two veg. I just need a crumb of your power, a crumb of your provision. Just a fragment of the leftovers would be more than adequate to meet my needs. It's actually this quite extraordinary statement of faith. And I think that's at work in the baskets of leftovers. Jesus makes I'm more familiar with Mark's account, but he makes a pretty big deal out of this a little bit later on when the disciples respond in a way that stuns Jesus when he says, "Beware of the yeast of the Pharisees and Sadducees," or the religious teachers. And the disciples immediately think that Jesus is having a go at them for not having any bread. And Jesus, it's a curious tale because he's like, you could almost sense his exasperation with his disciples. But he ends up asking them, he's like, "How many loaves, like how many basketfuls did you collect after I fed the 5,000? They're like 12. And how many after I fed the 4,000? They're like 7. And he's like, you still don't understand? So there's something about, you know, about Jesus's additional, over the top, extra leftover stuff that I think is quite remarkable because of what it tells us about the kingdom, that there is more than enough. You know, Melissa talked a bit about the about the scarcity, how we often see what's missing. We can be led to believe that there's not enough for us, or there's not going to be enough for us, and that fear and anxiety that there's not going to be enough for us leads us to all sorts of anxious behaviors, you know, hoarding and holding on to more than we need, and you know, all of the things that we don't do, right? We don't share. We're not as generous because of the fear that we sometimes harbor about, you know, the future. And yes, there's questions about wisdom and, you know, being adequately prepared and all of those sorts of things. But I think part of what Jesus's extra provision does for us is it reminds us that he can provide for us. And he can provide for us with next to nothing, and there's leftovers. And that ought to tell us about the kingdom that we are a part of and provide us with a bit of a blueprint for how we then engage with those around us. With a freedom that comes from knowing that Jesus can provide for all of our needs and some. So I think all of those things kind of sit behind the importance of the 12 baskets of leftovers. Still not sure what to do with the, you know, the connection with the 12 apostles or the 12 disciples, or the 12 tribes. I'm not sure exactly where the connection is in that, because they're just the leftovers in the end. But there is something I think quite significant. There are a couple of passages that spring to mind, but I'd have to do some more thinking before I would apply them necessarily. So anyway, thank you for those of you who answered those questions, asked those questions. I hope the answers have been helpful just to continue the conversation forward about what we do with Scripture and how we apply it in our lives. This coming Sunday, we're back in Romans. We've been going through Romans backwards. So we looked at chapters 12 through 16 in term 1, and then chapters 9 through 11 in term 2. And now in term 3, we're actually going back to the start. So we're going to Romans 1 through 4 in this term before finishing the year in Romans 5 to 8. Now that we have a pretty good idea of where Paul is going, we could go back to the start and keep the end in mind as we read what Paul has to say in the opening four chapters of Romans. So looking forward to being with you on Sunday. Looking forward to the questions that will no doubt arise from Romans 1 to 17, and being with you again next week as we continue the big three. Until then, God bless.
Thanks for joining us at the GBC Big Three podcast. We trust you found this inspiring, encouraging, challenging, but ultimately helpful to enable you to follow Jesus. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can also listen to the We Are the Church podcast, a discussion pod with real stories from real people at Guymere Baptist as they share their experiences of faith and discipleship in action. If you've enjoyed this pod, why don't you rate and review it? This way others can discover the podcast too.